kwisa gen sensation a show shafu makwisa bambi nabo balalanguluka apapende alwele nga apola shani ni nani wa mposha maka yeno tata ninkumbushelu inenga nafuka manalishi bandi mwemu mposha luse lueno yawe ninkumbushelu mawoko yenu mbekelu amo nalishi bandi mwea Into wing if you want funda Buku pepa ne pepa Ndele lenga kome chipingo Chipingo Teti nditakishe Teti njumwe Kwa fintu ifyo natika Habantua bengi teti beshiwe If you want it done, move on me once.
Saturday, August 4th, 2018. We do thank you for joining us from wherever you are listening us. Good evening, Western Australia, Japan, and the Pacific world. Good afternoon, Europe. Good afternoon, Africa, and most of the world. And good evening, those that are joining us from the parts of Russia, where it's almost like 1900 hours or 7 p.m., and those of us in America, like they say, good morning, America, and welcome to the show. I will be your host this morning. I'm hosting you from the great city and state of Dallas in Texas. Welcome to the show. We have an exciting discussion for you today. We'll be talking to a lady who takes care of kids that are growing up with parents who are incarcerated. That's a very weird thing. I never heard of anything like that. Actually, when I heard about this story, I was almost dumbfounded, and I thought it was just a joke or something that people make up. But anyway, that's a truth right there. We shall be She'll be joining us shortly as our technical gentleman or friend gets ready to connect. Good morning, Bella.
Good morning, Vanessa. How are you today?
Doing good, doing good. How's Atlanta?
Atlanta as well. It's nice and warm. No rain.
Warm, man. Can't compare. Our Texas city, you know, there was a day we reached 110 degrees here.
Yeah, that would be too much for us here. Yeah, so.
You know, right. Dr. Patrick, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, my brother. How are you?
Fine. How are the Carolinas?
Wonderful. And might I say, Dobre din or Dobre utro to our brothers and sisters in Russia.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, everybody's listening. Everybody's listening worldwide, and we greatly honor to bring this news and information to all our friends out there who follow and listen to the things that we do here. And we do our best with all that we can and with all work that is within us, and it's exciting. It's a joy to serve. Atlanta has shown up big in the house today. I think this is Miss Wendy Chanda Mutale. Hi, Wendy.
Good morning, everybody. How are you?
Good, good, good. How are you?
I'm fine. You know, my president is on the phone. I had to be on check today.
Okay. You all showed up, or did we issue a presidential decree and said everybody needs to be on the show, you know?
I know, right? Well, I'll sit back and enjoy the show.
Excellent. It's good to have you on, and we are excited to have you today. I believe our guest is on. Hello, Yama. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Nkama. Yes, our guest is on.
Our guest is on. All right, everybody, just like we splashed it on social media and we talked about this for weeks, we said we were going to do this and we were looking and waiting for this opportunity to come. Joining us today, I believe from Lusaka, which is in the afternoon, is Ms. Faith Masupa Kalunja. She is the founder and CEO at Mother of Millions Foundation. Faith is also a Mandela Washington Fellow, and she has been nominated for Outlook Inspirations 2018 by the BBC. Hi, Faith. Welcome. Hello, Faith. Okay, Yama.
Okay, let me try again.
Okay, all right. Yeah, these things happen, technical issues. What we are doing today, actually, for those of you that have joined us and those of you listening online, we are on a. We want to do a little thing here for Faith. We're calling it little because $500 is nothing. We've set up a little GoFundMe. If you are there, Rogers put it on his link, on his Facebook wall. We just want to do a little $500, Dr. Patrick, for Faith, so that we can help her with her work. I think it's worth it for us to do this, because when you hear her story, it's going to blow your mind away. I don't want to preempt what she has to say. And we shall hear what she's going to share with us. Ladies and gentlemen, this lady is taking care of ladies that are... Their kids are being brought up together with the mothers in the prisons. I'm still trying to wrap my thoughts around that. And when I shared this with somebody, the first question they asked me was, does the United Nations know about this? Is going on in Zambia? Something like that. So I said to myself, okay. So we wait to hear what she has to say. Yama, let me know when you're ready, and we shall do so. You can go to Roger's page and just $500. takes 10 people to give $50, and that will be it, or 20 people to give $25, and we'll be done. We just start such a little gesture to say, thank you, Faith, for what you are doing. We believe in this, and we will support you, and that is what is going on here. Bill, I don't know what your thoughts are on this. Okay, let me see if she's back. Okay.
Hello?
Hi, Faith, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you very well, thank you. How are you?
Doing good. Welcome to the show. I was just introducing you to say that you are the founder of Mother of Millions Foundation. You are a Mandela Washington Fellow, and you were nominated for Outlook Inspirations 2018 by the BBC. Welcome to Zambia Block Talk Radio.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me. I hope you can hear me well.
Yes, we can. If you can find yourself in a place where you are, it's quiet and nice, and you are relaxed, and we have this nice conversation. Faith, let me begin by saying, when did all this begin for you? I mean, somebody doesn't just wake up and decide to start educating and providing for other people's children. When did this start for you?
So basically, I am a public relations practitioner by profession. And,
okay.
I was working for a media house. And, you know, I'd always drive past my home, prisons, never about the prisons at all. Until one afternoon when I was actually very, very, very pregnant. And I had a prompt. I had a prompt by the prison.
Okay, you are breaking up. You are breaking up. I don't know what's happening. You are breaking up. It's on and off. Hello? Okay, can we try another line?
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, sure.
Okay, that's better. That's better. If you just stay right there, that would be good. Yeah, continue what you were saying.
Yes, so I'm driving past the prisons all the time. This afternoon, I had a prompt to stop, and I was about 8 months pregnant, which is my first son. I didn't really know what was happening in prison. And when I stopped, I found a water and asked whatever I could do, you know. So he said, well, you can bring us food and clothing. And I remember driving out without even knowing what was behind the prison door. And 4 months later, my baby was born. And I remembered I prayed. So I drove back to the prison. And when I did, they asked me where I was taking those things. So I said, well, to the prisoners. So they said they had the female section of the prison, and they had the male section of the prison. And so I said, well, let's go to the female, because I didn't know exactly how the prison looked like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when they opened the prison doors, the first thing that caught my eyes were children. And here I was, a Zambian. I did not know there were children in prison. I did not know, you know, children were being born in prison. And I was shocked. And I went back home. I was crying. My husband asked why. I said, do you know there are babies in prison? Babies being raised behind prison bars, sleeping in the same cells with their mothers, eating the same rations, sometimes even once, you know. And the burden was placed on my heart. I didn't know what it was. And I just asked God to direct me. And I think a month later, because I carried this with me, I thought, you know, education would be the best thing that could happen to a child behind prison bars. Because when I entered, I just want to give you a scenario. It was absolutely nothing. It was white. It was muddy. It had small cells. The kids had no shoes, they had no clothing, they had no space for themselves. So it was totally a different place. And then you wouldn't want to imagine raising your own child in such an environment. And so... no space to teach the children. But then we found the dining hall, which we demarcated, and we turned into a classroom. And the first time we had 42 children in that one class, between the ages of 1 to about 6 years old. So we had quite a number of kids, and you could just look at their face. I mean, they've never seen, some of them had never been in a class before. We painted the class so bright and had these little toys and books and everything. So what I wanted to do was to keep that mind safe, because when you enter prison, a child as little as 3 years old would salute and say, Buana. You know, Buana means in prison. Now, this is a three-year-old who's saluting to you and saying, Buana, you know. And when it's time for them to line up, so they make a line called Fora. So the babies, even the first one to run and line up to be counted among its prisoners. And I thought, what kind of a mindset are these children going to have? What kind of a country are we going to have? And that's what led me to establish schools within now the five prisons where we've been operating for the past 6 years, providing education, nutrition, health care support, and clothing included.
Faith, I'm just wondering, I'm sure in your work in doing this, why do those kids find themselves in a situation like that? First of all, isn't that against human rights? Somebody can help me out here, Dr. Patrick, those that have called in, Bella. And then my other question is that, is it because the children, the mothers to those children don't have relatives who can take care of them? What is the prevailing situation?
Okay, so if I may answer, the children are called circumstantial children, okay? So the circumstantial term refers to a term where it's not the desire to be in prison, but due to the circumstances they've found themselves in, they're forced to serve a sentence alongside their mother. I basically call them little prisoners, because if you have my child locked up with me in prison, being locked up at the same time with myself, that's just a little prisoner, isn't it? So when you use the word circumstantial, which they refer to that way, you're just trying to make the term sound better instead of saying a baby prisoner. So the Convention on Children's Rights, the UN Convention, that stipulates that the child has the right to be with its mother, you know, until a certain age. And the Zambian Prison Act tells you it's at the discretion of the senior superintendent to have those children in prison, okay? So until the age of 4 years, you know, they can be with their mothers. But the question is, do they get provided for, even if they're with their mothers? But many times you find that you will be told to say, they are not on our budget because they are not prisoners. Fine.
Of course.
They are not on your budget because they are not prisoners. Yes, but the state is mandated through the same convention. You know, the CRSP, the Bangkok rights, the Mandela rights, rules, prison rules, that the state should provide, and where necessary, in conditions, is even mandated to separate the child from its mother. So then, aren't these children entitled to the same? They're entitled to the same rights. Why not take it to school? Why then are they not, you know, given preferential care? So these are some of the things that have been missing in our Zambian prisons or Zambian setup due to what you call budget constraints, of which I totally disagree, because this is a controlled population. You're not talking about a population of 2 million children. You're talking about a population of maybe 500-600 per year. You know, you could have those children in prison. So if Mother of Millions, which is not funded by the government or any UN agency, with little fundraising efforts and whatever we have done out of our own pocket, would educate over 500 children in one particular prison for the past 6 years, what couldn't the government do better? Or how can the government, you know, even improve on that? So we have a problem. I'll not talk about other countries, because, of course, this is an Africa spread issue. But I'll specifically talk about my own country, because I, and every one of us, Zambians, and the government at large, to take care of these children.
Amazing. I'm even failing to speak here. Faith, do we know how many children are in Zambian prisons nationwide?
Okay. Currently, we have close to 3,000 children.
Say that again. Say that again.
I'm saying currently we have up to close to about 200-300 children. We have varying numbers. Numbers do vary. We have pregnant women in prisons. So at every given time, most of the prisons are pregnant, women. So far, the Saka Central Prison, as of 2 days ago, we had about 6 pregnant women. One did this. Okay, so now you're actually adding on to the numbers. As of Chimbokaila, which is Lusaka Central Prison, as of the other day, we had over 13 children, babies in prison. Okay. So we have different numbers, varying numbers in prisons around Zambia. There are times when they even go up to as high entirely the whole year. Like the previous year, we have close to about 500 children in prison, you know. So the numbers do vary. So we have those that are coming in with children, those that are leaving, are pregnant, and giving birth in prisons.
Are these women being arrested and locked up whilst they are pregnant, or they are getting pregnant in prison? Is this the doing of the prison warders, Faith?
I don't want to give you false information, but the information that I'll give you, having worked in prison for a number of years, I've worked there, I've seen most of the women come into prison pregnant. There could be cases of which I'm not sure the states, at least I'm caught it, but one thing I'm sure of is many, many women are incarcerated while they're pregnant and give birth in prison.
Okay. That is, we are talking to Faith Semasupakalunga.
And most of the time, they become in prison.
Okay. Faith, I understand, I read something on your website and through just looking at, in preparation, talking to you, that when you were young, you convinced your parents to adopt street kids and send them to school? Tell to us about that.
Yes, I grew up in a family of children, and every time my dad would come back from home, you know, from work, he would find kids in his house. At one time, he said, "Faith, my house is not an orphanage, because, you know, I'll find kids like in the streets and just." You know, they were hungry, you know, they were naked. And I was like, okay, we have the clothing at home and there's enough bread to feed somebody else. And so I'll get these kids and, you know, let them come home. And dad finds them at times and he'll get really upset to say, no, now you're turning your house into an
Okay. Yama.
Yeah.
Okay, Faith, we're still having challenges with your number. Yama, can we try to, I don't know, maybe we use an alternative number, one of the numbers that you gave. Can we do that?
Okay.
Yeah, let's try to do that. We need to get clear communication on this conversation as we go along. Work on that, Yama, and let me know when you are ready. We're speaking to Faith Masupakalunja. She's the founder and CEO at Mothers of Millions Foundations, which looks after children, as she has said, ranging between the ages of 1 to 6 years old, who are incarcerated together with their mothers. And I don't know, Bella. I don't know. I am still trying to wrap my thoughts around this thing, but I don't know. Talk to me, Bella, about this. I don't know. My mind is still...
Yeah, no, I'm in the same boat. My mind is spinning to understand what's going on. But I think she's providing us with good information. But I'd like to hear more about the policy of the government on children being born. I don't think that was quite clear to me.
Yeah, and then she's
talking
about...
Because, you know, in
the
US, we also have the same issue.
You're just reading my mind, and I don't, Dr. Patrick, please help us understand something here. What is the situation in the US? What's the policy on children incarcerated with their mothers?
Unfortunately, there is a myriad of situations in which it disallows you from wrapping your hands around one particular explanation. There are a few. For example, it is the situation where cruel and inhuman or unusual punishment cannot be meted out, whether you're in prison or in a halfway house. It cannot be done. So that's one thing. Then the second thing has to do with rape. Was the mother or mother-to-be, did she become pregnant in prison? Would you consider that a rape, or would you consider it a conjugal visit? The next thing you have to look at is the before and after. What happens to the children and the parents when they leave prison, or when they leave independent of one another? When the child reaches an age of 6, do they leave and go into a child care institution or go with parents? You have to look at that. And the last and I think most important situation is the medical conditions. Are the children being taken care of in a hospitalized or a clinic situation? So in the United States, you have to look at the federal-run prisons, you have to look at the state-run prisons, and you have to look at the local-run prisons, and they're all different, and they all have standards. But one thing is for sure, the federal law, when it comes to incarceration, is predominant across the country. The states can have no lesser standing than the federal standing of incarceration, but they can have a better condition that exists.
Okay.
So you can't be less than what the federal government has legislated. So
interesting.
With respect to Zambia, I'm not sure. I think we have to look at the federal, provincial, and local laws that govern this situation. And what you're doing now is publicizing a unknown existence. I think I would say maybe 80% are unaware of that condition that is found in Zambia.
Yeah, Dr. Patrick, in Zambia we just have, what can I say, state law. There's no district, provincial, or whatever. It's just state law. That's what it is.
Well, you know, that leads us to look into the conditions here in the United States as well as in countries of our listening audience.
Let's continue our conversation with Faith, and so that we learn as much as we can from her, so that we move from there. Faith, welcome back.
Thank you so much. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. For some reason, we seem to be having some technical issues. You were sharing with us how your father was responding when he was finding children in the house and that kind of situation. Please continue.
Yes, so my dad and my mom ended up sponsoring children who were not their own. You know, and I'm very proud to say that some have actually finished high school. And I was actually just in high school when they were doing this, you know. So, it was quite an amazing experience for me, and I'm grateful they took that step. I'm sorry, I'm around children, and I'm trying to try and get the space. Yeah, so basically...
Okay.
I did not know that I would end up with children in prison, really. I had no idea. I thought it was going to be an orphanage, but then I think the children that needed me were those ones that were vulnerable at that particular time, yeah.
Because the story goes that whilst you were growing up, you dreamt about having an orphanage. Is that right?
Yes. Somebody actually asked and said, why the prisons? You know, why children? Yeah, why children in prison? And my response was, perhaps a mother was praying for help to come by. Because the prison is not a place where you want to raise your child. You know, a prison is... You just imagine the first place your child knows home is that prison cell. The first place they ever celebrate their first birthday is a prison cell with strangers, people they don't even know, you know. So I'm glad that the Lord had to make me stop. It wasn't my decision. It hasn't been an easy journey. It's been a journey where you are discouraged. I had to stop my job to do this work full-time for the past 6 years. And it's something I've not regretted and I'll never regret. And it's something that I wake up every morning looking forward to do, and that is, change that one life. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, like I said, we've set up a small GoFund. We just want to do a Zambia Block Talk Radio family and the listening audience. We just want to do our little contribution and help Faith fulfill this passion and calling on our life. There's a GoFundMe on Roger's page. You can go there. Our target is just $500. If we can do it, it will just take 10 people to give 50 or 20 to give 25. So go to that page and make your goal. We would like to do this before the end of this day and forward this money to Faith, and so that we can just help in a little small way. So why the name Mother of Millions? Why the name Mother of Millions?
A lot of people ask me that. I think it came when I was actually very, very young, you know, and like I said, pick up children from everywhere. I didn't want to see old people moving with Lords, because I used to think when they have children, I remember when I first adopted, not really legally through the social welfare, but when I took this child home for dad's and mom's sponsorship because I wasn't working then, this child had lost the mother and the father, and I had to have her come home for weekends, and I just felt I could, you know, at the age of 15, these little boys and girls could call me mommy, and I was shocked. I was like, mommy, me? You know, and I just thought, this is it. There's so many children, so many parents who want to be allowed to have children that can love them and take care of them, and today they're suffering because there's nobody there. So many children who would like to be mothered. As one time driving past, and it was very cold, the prison, and I found these little boys as young as 4 in the streets, and one of them was crying. And in my heart, I was thinking, this is 9 p.m., and I'm thinking, maybe one of them is saying, mommy, where are you? You know, so whatever I can do to just uplift a life, I'm willing to do that, you know. I'm willing to change that. And believe it or not, one day I look forward to a prison that doesn't have children. I look forward to children not being born and raised in prison in my country. What I'm doing is because currently there's no other option. Children have still got to be with their mothers. And that is why I'm still going to provide that education and nutrition and everything. But ultimately, we want children to be raised outside prison, to be integrated into families. These children are shunned. It's not like they do not have families where they come from. They do have families, but once a mother commits a crime, they don't want anything to do with the child. We have a project called the Back to School Project. The Back to School basically was formed because, or rather as a result of parents who are incarcerated, who've left children behind. One woman came and said, I've been sentenced to 40 years in prison. And she looked at me and said, would you take my son to school? And I said, where's your son? And she says, I left that child with a neighbor. And I went and I looked for the boy. He was 15 years old, totally devastated. He lost his father, and the mother's sentence to 40 years was like another death to him. He couldn't perform well. Psychologically, he was traumatized. Now, this is the breadwinner. And in most cases, this is what happens. When a breadwinner is sentenced to prison, the family in our country, because of the high-density areas where some of these people come from, there's less education opportunities to learning. And so the children or the family is disintegrated once the parent is sentenced to a lifetime or 10 years. So you find these children now end up in the street. So the Back to School campaign is basically there to ensure that these children are sponsored into school. They are trusted, and, you know, we are able to sponsor them into school. And that is just part of the other extension work that we do as a Mother of Millions. Keep these kids off drugs, nutrition, and get them into school. Yeah.
Faith, everybody listening right now who has called in, those that are listening online, abroad in Australia and Europe and everywhere, I want you to share with us the type of things that you do with these kids that are in prison. You talked about it briefly, but I know a lot of people have just joined us. Could you just go through, you talked about nutrition, you talked about education and all those things. Explain that classroom environment. How does it look like in the prison?
I'll give you a practical scenario of another prison when I visited. A prison is meant to be a correctional center for adults. I don't think they were meant to be child-friendly. In Europe, I do understand that you probably have advanced services where you do consider mothers and children, but in Zambia, I'll say Zambia specifically, prisons were meant for male inmates, not even female inmates. But because of the rising of crime, maybe due to poverty and inadequate a lot of other aspects that have led to people getting imprisoned have led to seeing women, you know, now being incarcerated. So now you're talking about a prevalent rate of HIV infection in prisons, talking about a very high rate, that of higher than that of the population outside of tuberculosis. Now, this is also a place where you are keeping the children, you know. So you can imagine that children are actually prone to the infection of tuberculosis. They are prone to the infection of HIV. Why I say that, you can tell me HIV is transmitted sexually, but I can also tell you that there are women that have not been taught hygiene. And so imagine a woman is having a monthly period and probably leaves her issues carelessly, and there's a baby who calls for that. You don't want to imagine that scenario. So that, whether we like it or not, happens in prisons. So this is not a place you want to raise a child, definitely. But Mother of Millions has been creating spaces in prisons where we color the place, we paint, we have created a conducive space where you would even want to raise your own child if this were your child. You know, once you enter our prisons or you check our Facebook page, which shows you the pictures inside the classes, you'd actually see a safe space. You see children drawing and writing, you know. And this is what we want to do. Why? Because we want to create an environment. We want to create a different mindset. One thing that I tell children, the first time I got into there, I remember telling the 42 children that I had for the first time 6 years ago in that one particular class, I said, this is just a war. It cannot define you. It can confine you. So basically, the prison walls are there to confine, but they're not there to define. And we are there to tell these children to say, you are not defined by where you are. You can only be confined, you know. So we have been trying, and it's our desire to see to it that we could provide even much more if we have the support. There are several other prisons that need our services, but because we've been limited in terms of support, we're not able to reach. But the ones that we have reached, we do provide the education, we do provide the nutrition through support from people like yourselves. Whatever little that comes in buys on a monthly basis, whatever the children may need, diapers. We've had situations where children are born, there are no diapers, there's no milk, and maybe the mother is on earth, you know, and the child could equally get the transmission. So we also try to avoid the mother-to-child transmission of HIV in correctional facilities due to inadequate health care services. So now in those cases, you need children to feed. You need children on, you know, proper diets. So we can only do what we can, but we really need support. We really, really need support.
Excellent. Before I let Roger come in here, ladies and gentlemen, ZBTR family, $500 is nothing. That's our target. We can even do more than that. There's a GoFundMe that has been created on Roger's page. What we're trying to do is just raise a little something to send to Faith, so that we help and support with this noble. This is a noble project. Roger, how shall we go? We can do this before the end of this day. I believe we can do this before the end of this day. 10 people can give $50, or 20 people can give 25, and we'll be fine with that. Roger, good morning, my friend.
Good morning. Good morning, yes, sir. Thank you so much. And welcome, Faith, again. This is Roger here in Canada.
Thank you.
Yeah, we were supposed to talk actually yesterday. I don't know what happened. Maybe I fell asleep. I slept too much. Yeah, nice voices in the background there. Babies are playing. I just love it. The work you are doing, let's talk about some absolutes when it comes to money. First, How many children in total are you dealing with right now, Faith? Okay. Nathan, that PMP bell you were hearing, that was our phone dying. That was our phone dying. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, man.
Okay. Okay, let me try to connect again. Okay,
she gave us two numbers. She gave us two numbers, so we'll try and use the other one. Okay, I had no clue. I thought you were opening the door to your car or something. That was the beep I was hearing.
No.
Tell me, I was wondering what's going on. Okay, I'll get back.
Listening to Faith discuss, I know we have quite a number of pledges already which are coming. We hope we can step up. I don't know how you can how can describe this problem, but if there is no problem, unless the day you hear that Brother Roger has died, now there's GoFundMe, then go to Amber Fast.
These are real problems, okay?
Are real problems.
You know, like the common thing, let me open my Wendy's line here because I want her to respond to this. Let's stop making those speeches on somebody's graveyard and say it was due for promotion. Please, let's not do that, okay? Let's not do that. Dr. Patrick, you know my position on people saying let's pray when they can do something. I have a friend who says most of the things the Christians pray, and I know I'm going to create a problem with this statement. It's fine. I'm used to this anymore. You know what? A friend of mine says, Dr. Patrick, most of the things us Christians pray about, the Muslims just do them. They just do it.
I like that.
No, I'm telling
like
you.
I like that. I like that.
What do you want to pray about, Bella? Where is the Priscilla here, my Pentecostal sister? Yeah, I don't know what you want us to do. And this is Dr. Monsanji. Hey, Doc, are you in San Francisco or you are in Pennsylvania?
Doc is all over the place. He might be in Canada.
Yeah, Doc.
I am here in Philadelphia, and I'm listening attentively, and that is wonderful, the work that you are doing to bring us to the attention for this lady, Faith Masupa, who is doing a wonderful job. So we need to rally ourselves. And I'm happy that you're talking about our prayers. You know, when we pray, we should pray for real things. You know, things happen. God put us on earth so that we can accomplish something. So at least you can put my name there. I always have $20 around to donate.
You are added, Doc. You are added. Long time.
Yeah,
before,
you are added.
Before,
that's what we are looking
the radio,
for.
You know that.
We are trying to do this before the end of this day. We want to raise this $500, if possible more than that, and send it to Faith. If Faith is back here so that she can respond to Roger's question. Yes, she's back. Hello, Faith.
Hi.
Yeah.
We
Roger
heard your
asked
voice,
you a
yeah. Yes. Let me just say very quick questions I have here. How many children are you dealing with right now?
Okay. So countrywide, we're looking at 200 children.
200?
And sometimes we've looked, yes, currently, countrywide. And usually, like I mentioned earlier, the numbers vary. At times we have up to 300 children. And then most times, like I mentioned, over the past year, we've had over 500 children.
And all these are in jail? My answer was specifically for children who are in prison. All these 300,
in prison,
400?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, these have been in prisons, yes.
If you were to look
different
at money, how much do you think I don't know if it's budgeted for children, but what would be the cost of, say, feeding them or taking care of them? We may not have the money, but somebody could be listening or would want to commit themselves to something. How much money do you think we are talking about?
Okay, so I'll give you a scenario of maybe one prison and maybe a month. So we have, say, Lusaka Central Prison currently has about 15 children.
15 children.
And we have about, yes, one prison, and we have about 6-7 expecting mothers. Now, these mothers have been sentenced, and others have not even been on trial yet, so they are waiting for their sentencing. So if you look at, say, the feeding, you would probably feeding and taking care of these children, we'll probably look at per month. I'll give you a monthly a cost of close to $2,000.
$2,000, that is almost $200. $2,000 or 2,000 kwacha?
What is 2,000? No, not 2,000. 2,000 kwacha is too little. 2,000 kwacha, you may, if you had to use our exchange rate, which is $1 per 10 kwacha.
No, talking about kwacha, you use kwacha in Zambia. Because, you know,
yes.
People
okay,
in
so
Zambia, when
check,
they start talking
talk
in dollars, it sounds easy, but it can be deep. Talking kwacha.
Okay, let me talk in kwacha. So 200 kwacha, basically, will just buy you 2 packets of diapers. It won't buy
oh,
you
wow.
the basic food that you have, you want to have, okay? It won't buy the groundnuts or the peanut butter. So you are talking about, if you want to feed the entire month, you will talk about almost 15,000 kwacha to 20,000, because you're talking about diapers, which are usually
okay.
used.
So 15,000, how are you raising this money currently? How are you able to raise this kind of money to feed these children?
So basically, we do fundraising ventures. We
okay.
do appeal. So if you follow us quite closely on our social media, we do almost every time appeal to people to support, and there are people that come and support us in terms of some in kind, some don't give on a monthly basis 100 kwacha, some 1,000 and things like that, and that is evenly distributed even to other prisons, because we don't just look at one particular prison. We distribute, if we have some more donations, that distributed to other prisons as well.
Roger, let's do this. Faith, what's your website where people can go to, or those of you living outside Zambia can connect there?
Okay, so our website is www.motherofmillionsfoundation.org. But currently, it's been under construction. But if you want to closely follow us, we should be up and running before the end of probably this coming week. You can still log on to our social media page, which is the Facebook page, Mother of Millions Foundation. It's daily updated with activities and things like that of what we're doing. And it's also linked to our website as well.
Okay, excellent. And I know, I also just learned that you can actually give money through Facebook. That's right, Roger, right?
Yes, yes, you can.
Yes.
If they set up, I think I will talk with her a little bit more, because what we need to do, Faith, is probably get some steady contributors. Even if it's $10, someone
we've
committed to these other organizations here in North America, where we send $30 per month. We don't even know where that money goes. You know, so if we can find people who will be willing to put even 10, you know, per month from my credit card, we set it up. I'm sure we can help this cause.
We can do that.
Yes.
Before we finish here, let me ask Bella. Did you have any comment or question for Faith?
Yes, I had one question. How receptive is the government to outside?
Let me say, we will drop here because time has gone.
Time has gone.
Oh, it's my computer. to my computer. If time runs out, Nathan, we can
no,
still...
No, we're still running out of time. What we can do is we will drop here. We have 3 minutes remaining. What we can do, just stand by. We'll call you back and we'll continue this conversation for a few more minutes so that we need to build this thing up. Everybody, let me just mention, there is a GoFundMe that has been set up on Roger's page, and I know most of us here are Roger's friends, even those listening online. I know those of you in Australia are Roger's friends. Go to that website, to the Facebook page. We just need 10 people to do $50 or 20 to do 25. And that will be done. We'll be done with the $500. It's not much. We can do this, friends. This is a noble cause. This is a noble cause. We need to support this. Can you imagine? These kids are growing up in jail, in prison, actually. They don't know what it is. They don't know anything as what goes on out there. So Bella, Wendy, everybody here, Dr. Patrick, Dr. Monsanje, Priscilla, Titus, Cosette, come back. We shall talk about your event as well in the coming remaining few minutes as we go to our next segment here. All right, everybody, let's call back in as we get ready to go into our second segment.